From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Today on DNA, more changes are coming to Museum Row, but LA-based architects are not getting to design them.
I think maybe the project teams would benefit from having a more of an LA presence. You know, maybe people who have children who have gone to the Page Museum and come home, you know, and felt excited about that.
Hear from architecture critic Antonio Pacheco about what the La Brea tar pits mean to him. That's coming up. But first...
Let us in!
That's the sound of protests this past Friday morning outside the Marciano Art Foundation. That's the private museum in the one-time Scottish Rite Masonic Temple in Mid-Wilshire. It was founded by the Marciano brothers, Paul and Maurice, who made a fortune with their clothing company called Guess. The building is a gem. It was designed by Millard Sheets and remodelled by Koolapat Yantrasast. It has hosted shows by Ai Weiwei, Olafur Eliasson and Donna Huanka. The foundation opened in May of 2017, and at the time, art world watcher Christoph Noe, co-founder of Larry's List, told us the following.
We are in an age where we are all super hungry for contemporary art, and I think this trend we can see in the number of visitors at the art fairs, in the number of museum goers, and also for the private museum, and people are queuing. I think this is fantastic.
The Marciano Art Foundation joined an exploding crop of private art museums that were founded this century. In Los Angeles, it joined the Broad and the now-closed Main Museum. And now, 2.5 years after its opening, several dozen people took to the streets of the Tony Hancock Park neighbourhood. They marched and waved placards bearing slogans like "Art's work is labour," "Guess who's mad," and "Honk for art labour." The LA Times culture writer Carolina Miranda was there, and she's been covering the whole saga since it had started the previous Friday.
That has been a breakneck series of events. It started with almost 6 dozen employees, visitor services associates and docents at the Marciano Art Foundation announcing that they would unionize. It was followed on Tuesday evening by an email from the Marciano laying all of those workers off and then subsequently announcing that they were going to close the museum until further notice. And then that was followed on Wednesday by another announcement saying that there were no current plans to reopen the museum. And that's where we stand. And so the question now is, why was the museum closed? The museum has said it has been due to low attendance, and that has been the issue. Obviously, the folks with the union see this as a union-busting move, and I know that the union has filed an unfair labor practice charge with the National Labor Relations Board over the closure.
Can you just summarize, what is the Marciano Art Foundation? Is it a conventional museum?
The Marciano Art Foundation is a privately held foundation, which are usually very small types of foundations, and it's somebody who's maybe doing a charitable or some sort of public service act and therefore is seeking that tax exemption. So in the case of the Marciano, that would be showing the art collection, running education programs, hosting school groups, all of that are the sorts of programming activities that, you know, they can seek tax exemption in order to do. Another model might have been the early Broad Foundation when they were like a lending library of art for Eli Broad's collection.
But the point is, to maintain their tax-exempt status, they have to actually show art to the public and therefore be open.
In order to maintain their tax-exempt status, they do have to have some sort of programming. And now, whether that programming is public, open to the public, and can be accessed, say, by school kids and university students, that could be one thing. They could, if they wanted to, the law would allow it, they could switch to another type of mission and decide that they're going to be an art lending library, and so they're going to loan art to museum exhibitions and not be a public-facing institution. I think those are all the questions people are asking right now in terms of what's going to happen with this foundation, what's going to happen with the building, what's the next step going to be. You know, we don't know.
That was Carolina Miranda of the Los Angeles Times. We reached out to the foundation ourselves and we received the following statement. Due to low attendance the past few weeks, Marciano Art Foundation will be closing the current exhibitions early on November 6th after a 5-month run. We have no present plans to reopen. Now, after talking with Carolina, we ran into a guy who calls himself Jerry the Priest. He is not an ex-staffer at the museum and he may not be a priest.
I play the trombone to raise money for women's empowerment.
Got it. And what brought you here today?
These are the nicest people I've ever met in a museum. I was just here 2 weeks ago, and I had the greatest time visiting the museum. And when I found out what happened, I had to drop everything and fly from the San Gabriel Valley to support these people. This is insane. It's outrageous. It's not going to stand.
That's Jerry the Priest. And those nicest people, well, they're the visitor services associates. And they're the ones who've been laid off from their jobs following their organizing effort. Two of those organizers are Eli Petzold and Izzy Johnson. DNA producer Avishai Artsy and I got to talk with them. We asked about their unionizing effort and about art labor at a time when contemporary art is a booming cultural and financial asset.
We want to have a union ultimately because we believe that our work has dignity. Our work involves, yes, you know, preventing children from touching the art and stuff like that, but most of our job is actually engaging with visitors about the arts. It's a job that requires either, you know, a formal education or just a knack for communication or, you know, experience as an educator. It requires a huge mix of talents and abilities, and we ultimately don't believe that it's minimum wage labor, which is what our wage is.
Did you have conversations with Maurice about your concerns before embarking on all of this?
He has never made himself available. No member of the Marciano family, including his daughter, Olivia, who is the artistic director, which is a curious job. There is no curator here. They have never presented an opportunity for us to speak directly with them. There have been opportunities to speak with management. I don't know how many people took advantage of that, but there was just such a demonstrable history of people coming there with requests, big and small, and being stonewalled across the board.
How did you react when you heard the news that the museum would close indefinitely?
I was actually walking to get dinner, and I stopped in the middle of the street and was almost hit by a car. It was really shocking. I expected them to retaliate, but not to do it this way. I thought they would kind of pick us off one by one, you know, be like, oh, you were on your phone, or, you know, oh, you were, you know, 1 minute late, like, you know, you're done, you're fired. But it was very sudden, very abrupt, and it shocked a lot of people. It's definitely heartened me that everyone's been able to come out and come together.
You're listening to Izzy Johnson and Eli Petzold, staffers at the Marciano Art Foundation who were laid off following their unionization effort. Now, the Marciano brothers have pushed back against unions in the past. Over 20 years ago, they moved jeans production out of Los Angeles to cut costs, dogged by allegations of illegal labor practices. But this drive at the Marciano Art Foundation also comes hot on the heels of unions being formed at other museums. The New Museum, Tenement Museum, and the Guggenheim in Manhattan, and the Frye Art Museum in Seattle. Back to Avishai Artsy.
The issues that you've outlined about pay and a lack of recognition for your labor, do you feel like that is specific to Marciano Art Foundation, or is that based on your conversations with employees at other, say, museums or galleries, is that endemic to the art world?
I think it's definitely endemic to the art world. I think that arts labor is really viewed as this sort of like privileged sector of labor that, you know, people who are working in the arts often have college degrees or like postgraduate degrees, and that somehow this is not our main source of income or is not our livelihood or is in some way like that we are not serious workers. We were told initially going into this position that it was a stepping stone position, and now they have just like ripped that stepping stone out from under us. I think that this is definitely a general problem that is happening in the arts world. Like, we've seen this in New York and a lot on the East Coast with other galleries and museums unionizing. So I think that I hope that this is sparking a larger conversation in Los Angeles about the nature of arts labor and how it should be fairly compensated and respected.
Is part of your wanting to have a union also a reaction to what's happening right now in the art world and sort of the monetization, commodification of art, the fact that art has become now an asset class for rich investors and that you feel like the workers aren't getting any share of that higher value of the art that you're, you know, overseeing?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, even on a much smaller scale example, the cafe here serves food that is at least as much as we're being paid or more than that. You know, they have like $15 sandwiches and we're making $14, $15 an hour. So I just think that like it's all wrapped up in a larger problem that art has become this really trendy kind of like, it's this like hot button issue. Like now, like a lot of celebrities are collecting now, a lot of people who are, you know, in the fashion industry or, you know, in the entertainment industry at large are kind of taking this thing that is supposed to be for all people and really monetizing it and making it into a luxury class of art.
So far, LA museums have not unionized, with the exception of the Museum of Tolerance. Their union, AFSCME, provided support to the organizers at Marciano Art Foundation and stand ready to help other museum staffs. We asked Johnson and Petzold if they're hearing from colleagues in other LA museums.
Yeah, I think there have definitely been people who have reached out to us. I'm not sure if I'm really at liberty to give the institution's names, but there have been people who have reached out to us and are really closely watching our fight. Some of them are here today in support.
If you were approached by, say, an employee at, say, the Broad, and they said, we're thinking about starting a union, what would you tell them?
We would tell them to be ready to fight. It is a very long process. It requires a lot of work off the clock. So I think that it is definitely what they should do. But to know that it's not something that happens overnight, even once you get into contract negotiations, that can take many, many months. So just be ready for a fight.
How much do you think a union can kind of fix some of the issues at stake here? And how much is there something sort of structural going on within the arts economy that then dovetails with the cost of living in cities like LA that have lots of arts institutions? The rents are astronomical. Healthcare is astronomical. Student debt is astronomical. Are those all factors in this story?
Yes, those are all factors in this story. And I think that that's why in LA specifically, also in New York, but you're seeing this happen more in New York. And I hope that the middle of the country and the rest of the country is seeing this and is recognizing this and will also start pushing for more unionization in arts labor.
But also, should there be more discussions about other aspects of the economy? You've talked again about these degrees, but these degrees are expensive.
I would say yes. A lot of times in college you're offered internships that would, be applicable to college credit. But a lot of times, I think that's also another conversation to have is the idea of these unpaid internships where you're essentially free labor for any institution. And it's how are you supposed to pay your rent? How are you supposed to be able to live, be able to pay for food, all that sort of thing, while you're getting this experience but not being compensated for it. So yes, I think that it is a much larger conversation that needs to be held also in academic institutions going forward from here.
I'm just curious about the Marciano Foundation itself. It feels to the people looking in from the outside as if it's some kind of tax write-off for someone that owns a lot of art.
I will say that given the history of this building and the fact that it's a monumental building with a huge auditorium that has been completely blasted out, there is not, the Mocha Geffen maybe is a similar sort of space, but to my knowledge, there's not really a venue for the sort of monumental works that you find, the Ai Weiwei and the Olafur Eliasson installations. Sorry, I had to do that. And that's one of the reasons I really, really, really believe in this institution, even though there are all these tax issues, questions about, how valid is this space. It is an amazing space, and I was really excited to be part of this. And all we wanted was to say, look, a big part of what people enjoy about this space is interacting with us. You don't see it because you're up in that office, but we're the people who are we're leaving an impact on people's days. The other day I was talking about Roland Barthes with a visitor. It was a totally random conversation. And then about 15 minutes later, we covered the death of the author and, all sorts of this stuff. And it felt like I had really impacted this person's day.
I think you should be paid triple just for understanding Roland Barthes. Well done. Well done. And yes, the space is fantastic. And that brings me actually to one of the shows, which was Ai Weiwei. Everybody loved the Ai Weiwei show. It sat so well in the dramatic overhauled space, as you said, the gouged out space. It was marvelous. Somebody like Ai Weiwei, whose work is seen as inherently itself questioning of the system, questioning of justice issues. Would you like to have a chance to talk to an artist like Ai Weiwei about what's going on now and see what he would say?
That would be fantastic, yes. Absolutely. I wasn't here for when he was here to speak to the VSAs. I started shortly after that show opened, and it was a great time for us, too. It was really, really busy. We were at 100% capacity most days. We got to have these wonderful conversations with guests coming into the foundation. I would relish the opportunity to talk to an artist like that.
I also just want to say that we've had some some shows of support from artists who are represented in the collection. Frances Stark, who is represented in the collection, she's been very vocal. And then we also got a really amazing shout out from Sadie Barnett. It was really, really validating to see that from those two artists whose work are in the collection. They're up and coming artists. They're not people. They're people whose reputation is on the line, and they're taking a risk for us, because ultimately it's the collectors who have the deep pockets who are able to make these artists, or break, exactly. So I was just so floored to see those calls of support and really curious to see if anybody else is going to say anything.
So what is the path forward? Is there hope that the museum will reopen and that you'll have your jobs back?
They've been sending a lot of really mixed messages. Some people, when they've inquired, have been told that they're closed for renovations. They've said that they are closed indefinitely, that they're closed permanently. So they keep shifting that narrative. Honestly, I think that we do want our jobs back, but only with the stipulation that they recognize our union and that they meet our demands. So if that can't happen, which I think that it's clear that if they're willing to like shut the museum down before they're willing to negotiate with us, then I think no.
That was Eli Petzold and Izzy Johnson, staffers at the now-closed Marciano Art Foundation and members of the Union Organising Committee. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Coming up after this break, the La Brea Tar Pits has a special place in the hearts of many Angelenos. Does that mean an Angeleno architect should design its remodel? Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Last week, LACMA director Michael Govan and supporters went before an LA City Council committee to ask for the air rights over a portion of Wilshire Boulevard to be vacated.
I respectfully request that the committee approve the vacation of the airspace. It's a small portion of the new museum street frontage and located well above the street, 19 feet above.
The request was approved. That is another hurdle removed from the path of the construction of a new museum building at LACMA, a building designed by the Swiss architect Peter Zumthor. Zumthor's proposed design has divided Angelenos. Those that don't like it typically argue that Zumthor may be a fantastic architect, but he doesn't fully get LA, and his design does not feel right for its site. Now, LACMA is just one of four institutions on Museum Row that are expanding and have tapped an outside architect to design the building. You have Jean Cohn at the Peterson Automotive Museum, Renzo Piano at the Academy Museum, and now comes the La Brea Tar Pits, which is soon to announce its chosen designer from a short list of three. Dorte Mandrup from Denmark and Weiss Manfredi and Dilla Scofidio and Renfro, both from New York. Dilla Scofidio and Renfro designed the Broad Museum. These commissions have raised some questions in the design community. How are these selections made? Who best interprets local conditions? And should global cities like Los Angeles try and maintain their regional character by nurturing local talent, or invite the brand of the world's most talented designers to our high-profile sites? All of this is going to be under discussion at a public event that's co-produced by DNA this Saturday at A+D Museum. It's called Shortlisted. In a moment, you'll hear from co-organiser Antonio Pacheco. But first, we checked in with the LA Times art and architecture writer Carolina Miranda.
This was an opportunity for the Tar Pits to really think about how this site might play with and or counter some of what's going on there. I think they have done something interesting in that all of the firms that they have include prominent women designers, and I think that is very important to note because that is a very macho street corner when it comes to the architecture. But I personally would have liked to see an LA architect in the mix. And we're standing right outside of the Marciano right now, and I think an LA architect who has been getting a lot of attention for his museum and other work has been Kulapat Yantrasast. He did the renovation of the Marciano. I just did a profile of Johnston Markley, Sharon Johnston and Markley. They just did the Manil Drawing Institute in Houston that has been widely acclaimed.
And they did a building for the arts department at UCLA. But more to the point, Sharon Markley, and to your point about women, there were plenty of talented women in LA that could have been considered.
Well, and Sharon Johnston certainly would have been one of them, right? Yes, I agree. There are people in LA that could have been considered. And I do think it is that balance of not wanting to be parochial and being open to outside design, because that is, to some degree, the story of LA, is people from other places coming and designing here. But I think to have a rundown, bringing the race down to three architects and not one of them is an LA firm, represents a failure of imagination.
That was Carolina Miranda of the LA Times. I'm Frances Anderton. This is DNA, and we're talking about the La Brea Tar Pits and its pending redesign. To repeat, this issue of who should design it is not meant to sound parochial. LA has been built by people who came from elsewhere, and the region constantly benefits from refreshing visions. But there are some sites that have a particular meaning to people who've spent time here. And the La Brea Tar Pits is one of them, especially to folks who came here when they were in the second grade. And one of those is Antonio Pacheco. He's an architecture critic and managing editor at Architect. That's an online architectural platform. He is co-producing Shortlisted, the design forum coming up this Saturday.
I grew up here. I grew up in Pacoima in the San Fernando Valley. And I remember making the trip out to the Tar Pits with my elementary school. I remember, getting off the school bus and you march in a straight line up the block and then you turn the corner into the park and you immediately smell the tar pits. And that's such a visceral kind of memory for me as a child. And then, of course, you see the mammoths. And there was a New York Times article from 1977 when the first museum opened, or when the museum first opened. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read the intro passage, because I think it's really just speaks to, I think, what we're talking about. Here it is. It says, "You can smell the site before you see it. The rancid odor of tar emanates from an asphalt lake the size of a football field. From a concrete observation platform, you can look down on the muddy yellow water, the surface constantly broken by bubbles from hidden tar springs. At one end is a scum of tar in which a plaster mammoth sinks, its mouth open as if to bellow in useless rage." And just reading that passage, where else in America does something like that exist? I think it's very unique, to Los Angeles. And that's just the site, right? And so then you have the museum itself, which to me is probably one of the best examples of the kind of indoor-outdoor architecture that Los Angeles is so famous for. You have, this building that's designed by two local architects, Willis Fagan and Frank Thornton, who were basically directed by George Page himself in almost every aspect of the design. And George Page was inspired to build the museum there based on his own kind of childhood experiences of seeing this giant tar pit that was going unused or, sort of wasted space, which, lends, I think, more to that legacy. And because it's embedded in this hillside, you can also roll down the side. And the New York Times article mentions that children were doing this in the 1970s. And I did it in the 1990s when I was growing up. And, I took my daughter there a couple of weeks ago and we did the same thing with her. And so that kind of relationship, I think, is really beautiful. And to be able to have that, to maintain that is something that's super important.
It sounds from what you're saying as if there's a concern about the three teams sort of not being sufficiently steeped, excuse the pun, in, the tarry landscape that we're talking about. But also, it sounds as if you're even questioning whether there should even be any fundamental change over there.
Well, I reject the idea that museums need to always grow or that they always need to increase in size. They end up becoming these giant shopping malls. And, we're in Southern California, of course, and so, malls can and are public spaces, but public spaces don't need to be like malls all the time. And so it's, I think, worrisome that this expansion is sort of taking place simply, it seems, to kind of keep up with what's going on
with the Joneses
at LACMA.
With the Joneses at LACMA, yeah. And at AMPAS, the Academy Museum, and at Peterson Automotive Museum.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that's my concern, is that the museum is simply being expanded just to keep up.
Now, in asking Dr. Laurie Betterson-Varga, who heads the Natural History Museums of LA County, sort of why they're expanding, she says, among various reasons, she says, well, we keep finding more bones, you know, than how they've wound up with these three teams, which is Dillis Cofidio Renfro, Daughter Mandrup, and Weiss Manfredi. She says the reason why they winnowed down the long list to that three was because each of those three has experience producing buildings at, and I may be summarizing her words a bit here, but producing buildings at the intersection of landscape and museum. Do you think that's a reasonable argument for choosing those three architects, or do we have local designers who could absolutely have met that criteria as well?
Yeah, I think that criteria makes a lot of sense. That's how the site is organized. And I think that the firms that they selected, there's nothing wrong with the firms themselves. They're all very capable, excellent firms that have done great work, some of them in LA and all of them everywhere else. So it's not necessarily the selection of the firms, I think, that's a problem. It's more, I think maybe the project teams would benefit from having a more of an LA presence. Maybe people who have children who have gone to the Page Museum and come home, you know, and felt excited about that.
Sure. No, in terms of public reaction to the three approaches that were put forward by the shortlisted teams, possibly the sort of loudest kind of, whoa, hang on a sec, you know, was to the proposal by Dillis Cofidio Renfro to take the mammoths out of the Tari lakes and possibly move them indoors. I'm referring to the plaster mammoths. And that seemed to suggest a lack of understanding of Angelino's, like, deep affection for those plaster mammoths. Did you have that same reaction?
Yeah, I think the mammoths should definitely stay where they are. but, you know, I mean, it's similar to what's happening with LACMA. That approach is not necessarily something that would be taken in another place. You know, you wouldn't move the Alice statue in Central Park and put it in the basement of the Guggenheim, right, if you were doing an expansion. Like, you just wouldn't do that in another place. And often it feels like some of the firms that come to Los Angeles to do work just don't value what we have.
That was Antonio Pacheco, co-producer of Shortlisted, a forum that will take place this Saturday at A+D Museum. Speakers will include Dr. Laurie Betterson-Varga, head of the Natural History Museums of Los Angeles County, and Christopher Hawthorne, who is chief design officer for the City of Los Angeles. The forum is free and open to all. Find out more at kcrw.com/DNA. You've been listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton. Avishai Artsy produced and edited this program with a final mix by Ray Guana. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week.